Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 2nd, 2016. We'll begin this part of the broadcast with a reading of the obituaries. Terry L. Grider, Sr., 67, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away at 1:17 a.m. on Sunday, January 10th, at the Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. A memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, February 5th, at the G.T. Church, 500 South 27th Street, Decatur. Burial will be in the North Fork Cemetery in Decatur. Rachel Dean Ronan, 93, of Litchfield, passed away 2:44 a.m. Saturday, January 30th, in Heritage Health Therapy and Senior Care, Litchfield. Funeral Mass will be 10 a.m. Tuesday, that's today, in Holy Family Catholic Church, Litchfield, with the Very Reverend James L. Newman, V.F., officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour before services in the church. Burial will be in Holy Cross Cemetery, Litchfield. Plummer Funeral Home, Litchfield, is in charge of arrangements. Memorials, Litchfield Veterans Memorial Garden Fund, Celtic Hospice Care, or PAWS Care of Montgomery County, and that's P-A-W-S, PAWS Care. Theodore Ted R. Spence, 85, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, January 31st, at McKinley Court in Decatur. Services to celebrate the life of Ted R. Spence will be 10 a.m. Thursday, February 4th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Thursday at the funeral home before the service. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the donor's choice. We turn again to local news. The dateline is Mount Zion, and the article was written by Ryan Voiles. Headline, Mount Zion gives go-ahead to design new pipeline for water tower. An estimated $175,000 will be set for construction of a water main loop as part of the overall Mount Zion Water Tower project. Village board members went ahead Monday night with a plan to have MSA Professional Services, a firm with offices in Champaign, design and engineer for a 3,650 linear foot water main loop to connect the existing water distribution system to the planned location of a new water tower on 2 acres of land near 430 South Illinois 121 in the southernmost part of Mount Zion. The property, which has sat vacant for several years, was purchased last month by the village for $77,000. Part of that work would include the construction of a 12-inch water main loop that would not only supply the new water tower, but also help with pressure and supply issues on the southeast side of the village. Village Administrator Julie Miller said the work is necessary as part of the larger water tower project, which has been estimated to cost the village $3 million and be completed by summer of 2017. The water main loop installation is not included in the overall project cost. The estimated $175,000 cost of the loop would be handled by the village's Public Works Department, which Miller said would save the village more than $225,000 as compared to contracting the work out to an outside agency. This is really about getting the first leg of the project set up, Miller said. The actual cost of the work is expected to be known once the design and engineering work is done later this spring. If the village board approves the plan, it is expected to take the Public Works Department 4 weeks to complete the project. A new water tower has been an object of interest to village officials for several years, as the current 60-year-old structure has a maximum space for 100,000 gallons, which is insufficient to serve projected future water needs for the village. Mary Hunt, who writes the column Everyday Cheapskate, offers this tax information. Be accurate to avoid these expensive tax mistakes, she says. You've rounded up your receipts, figured out all your deductions, and now you're ready to load that onto your tax forms. This is not the time to get sloppy. Make sure you don't run any of these red flags up the flagpole of your tax return, and you will greatly reduce the chances of getting hit with the most dreaded of all tax events, the audit. First, messed up math. Double check to make sure your arithmetic is correct. Math errors are not limited only to miscalculations. They could also be truncated numbers. Negative numbers need to have brackets around them. Consider attaching a spreadsheet or adding machine tape. E-filing makes sure that math calculation errors don't occur. 2. Sloppy records. If you are self-employed, your deductions you need to be very carefully documented. As a member of this group, don't be tempted to blur the line between personal and business expenses, especially mileage deductions and home office usage. 3. Missing mileage. Automobile logs are one of the most commonly audited items. If you take this deduction, make sure your records are detailed with beginning and ending odometer readings, location, and reason for the trip. 4. Overstating contributions. Charitable deductions that are more generous than the IRS's average guidelines could give an auditor reason to pause. Taking deductions for large non-cash contributions are particularly suspect. Be sure to have all receipts showing the date of donation, the receiving organization, and the valuation of the donated items to document these contributions. The workbook, Money for Your Used Clothing Tax Year 2015, contains more than 1,400 market values for common household and clothing donations that do meet IRS guidelines, and makes sure you're spot on with your charitable deductions is the best $20 you'll spend. You can get it by calling an 800 number, 1-800-550-3502. That's for the workbook. Take the deductions you're entitled to with confidence and peace of mind. 5. Wrong tax figures. If you are preparing your own taxes, be sure to pull the correct numbers off the tax tables. E-filing will automatically pull the right numbers, so this is something to consider if you are opting to do it on your own, without an accountant or tax preparation professionals. Check to see if you are eligible for free file at www.irs.gov. Look for the free file link under File, Filing and Payment on the upper right side. 6. Correct incorrect ID numbers. The most common mistakes, according to the IRS, have to do with Social Security numbers. Make sure they are accurate and match the names given. If you show dependents, you must include their Social Security numbers. Failing to include a dependent's name and Social Security number can result in underpayment or being denied the earned income credit. 7. Missing attachments. Attaching the required documentation, such as W-2s and 1099s, is critical. All necessary forms and schedules should be included with sequence order given in the upper right-hand corner. 8. Failure to sign. Be sure to sign your return, both spouses if filing jointly, and make a copy of it and all supporting documents for your records. Remember, being audited isn't always bad. Sometimes the IRS will discover they owe you money. And finally, 9, receiving a sizable refund. This is not a red flag to signal an audit, but it's a sign that you're making a colossal mistake. It means you overpay your taxes. Part of your paycheck goes missing every payday, and you need to find it. It's stupid to overpay your taxes and then find yourself running to the credit cards because you can't make your paycheck stretch far enough. Fix your withholding. And if you want that big annual refund, automatically deposit the difference to a savings account every payday. We're reading from the Life section, and on this same page is Dear Abby's column. So we have one more letter left to read in her column. Dear Abby, I have been in a rocky relationship for 10 months, and I'm not sure how to get out. I have tried multiple times to leave, but every time I tell her, she begs me not to, says horrible things, and threatens to kill herself. She says she'll never be happy again, that, quote, I always do this, quote, and it hurts her so much. It makes me feel so bad. I just give in and give her what she wants. She doesn't trust me. I have to give her all my passwords, and she checks my phone daily. She has to know everything I'm doing, and if I don't tell her, look out. The next world war is going to happen. I have told her many times that if she can't trust me, there's no way we can be together because it will make a miserable life for both of us. Her constant worrying whether I'm going to leave her is starting to get to me. I really can't take this anymore. I have considered some extreme things to get out because I am so unhappy, and I know she is too. I've tried everything. Please help me. And the letter is signed, Stuck in a Nightmare. Here's her answer. Dear Stuck, it is time you realize that you can't fix what's wrong with this woman. Her insecurities are a bottomless pit. You have described a hostage relationship, not a loving one. So pack your things and get out of there now. If she threatens suicide and you know how to contact her family, alert them after you have gone. But do not pause, do not explain, and do not look back. Your safety and your sanity depend upon it. Turning now to the opinions page, we have this editor's pick column. I guess it's an editorial, and the headline is Police Worries Push Violent Crime. Chicago, never an island of tranquility, has been roiled by a surge in serious violence. Last year, the number of murders rose by nearly 13% over 2014, and shootings increased by a similar amount. Figures for January indicate a continuation of that unhealthy trend. What is happening here is also happening elsewhere. Last year, Cleveland suffered a 90% jump in homicides. In Nashville, the increase was 83%. In the 50 biggest U.S. cities, the Washington Post reports, homicides were up by 17% last year, quoting the worst annual change since 1990. Over the past quarter century, America has gotten much safer. In 1991, the murder rate was more than double what it was in 2014. Chicago, which had 943 murders in 1992, was down to 484 last year. But the recent shift raises the specter of violent crime making a comeback. How could that happen? In October, FBI Director James Comey said there is, quote, a chill wind blowing through American law enforcement, quote, which could make, and this is a continued quote, officers reluctant to get out of their cars and do the work that controls violent crime. The theory is called the Ferguson effect. As police face greater scrutiny in the aftermath of the fatal shooting of Michael Brown in 2014, they are more hesitant in doing their jobs. Officers are backing off proactive policing, and criminals are emboldened, wrote analyst Heather McDonald of the conservative Manhattan Institute in the Los Angeles Times. It's hardly implausible to think that, given the intense spotlight that is shown on cops who have killed unarmed black men, some officers would shy away from some confrontations. It's not far-fetched to figure that, in that case, bad guys would take advantage of the leeway. But a one-year increase is not a trend. The national murder rate rose in 2005 and 2006, only to head back downward. In Chicago, homicides spiked upward in 2008 before falling in each of the next 3 years. Last year's total was lower than the number in 2008. Northeastern University criminologist James Allen Fox has looked at the murder rate in individual cities over time and made a discovery. Quoting Mr. Fox, I found 2-to-1 odds that if it goes up by 20% or more 1 year, it will go down the following year, he told me. Random fluctuations are inevitable. In a period of relatively low crime rates, there's probably also an irreducible minimum, which means that everything else being equal, they are more likely to rise than to fall. But it would be imprudent to ignore what happened in 2015. The numbers cited by those who see a Ferguson effect are not conclusive and could turn around this year. Still, as McDonald told me, quote, a 17% change in a year, up or down, is huge. A one-year increase is not a lasting upward trend, but any lasting upward trend begins with a one-year increase. Quote, "It is not possible to speak to police officers, in my experience, without hearing of their concerns about the current political climate regarding policing and the hostility they are encountering on the street," she attests. But diagnosing the causes of an increase in violent crime is not the same thing as devising a cure. The Ferguson effect, if it is real, is the result of factors that are not terribly amenable to control. One reason police may be more nervous is the ubiquity of video devices that document their actions, which are sometimes horrifying. In the old days, the Chicago cop who pumped 16 bullets into Laquan McDonald would have gotten away with it because his lies would have gone undetected. What makes some cops wary is the fear of being caught doing things they are not allowed to do. The video revelations have had another effect, deepening mistrust of the police among African Americans. Many black teens in Chicago fear cops as well as criminals. The greater their fright, the less cooperation and the more resistance law enforcement will face in black neighborhoods. Neither of these factors can be banished by a change in policy or political rhetoric. The only hope is that police will learn to operate with appropriate aggressiveness without committing abuses, and that when they do, they will earn the confidence of law-abiding citizens, making their jobs easier. That change is something to be desired if it turns out there is, in fact, a lasting Ferguson effect, or if there isn't. This editorial was written by Steve Chapman, who blogs in the Chicago Tribune. Let's look at the A3 briefs for today. County Market and the University of Illinois Extension will host Healthy Eating Through the Aisles from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Thursday, February 11th. The guided tour of County Market, 1175 West Grand Avenue, with nutrition experts, will show what should be looked for on food labels, picking foods on a budget, and healthy options from the different foods. The tour is free, but a spot must be reserved in advance. Register online at go.illinois.edu/DMP by Monday, February 8th, or by calling the Macon County Extension office at 877-6042. The Macon County Health Department is offering a diabetes self-management program from 2:30 to 5 p.m. for 6 weeks on Tuesdays beginning February 9th. The program, which will be held at SIU School of Medicine Family Physician's Office, 250 West Kenwood Avenue, is free and open to the public. Participants will learn practical ways to deal with pain and fatigue, discover better nutrition and exercise choices, understand new treatment choices, and learn ways to talk with their doctor or family about their diabetes. For more information or to register, call Robin or Sally at the Health Department at 423-6550. General Electric Lighting has cut an additional 15 employees from the workforce of the Mattoon Lamp Plant after laying off approximately 50 last fall. GE linked the action to growth in LED lights and decreasing global demand for traditional lighting projects. Laurie Borgman has this column called A Classic Catch 22. My idea of fun doesn't include losing my wallet. It disappeared a few weeks ago. Once we finally gave up the search, I bought a new wallet. It was oddly freeing, a fresh start. When I opened my old wallet, you never knew what might fall out. Gift cards, car wash coupons, random receipts, and on rare occasions, even money. Now I can open my new wallet and know precisely what is in it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. No credit card, no driver's license, no insurance card, no Costco card, no library card, not even a trace of lint. I notified all the credit card companies and even closed a few accounts permanently. The other credit card companies, the ones I still wanted cards from, promised to send new cards in a few weeks. My next stop was a new driver's license. I looked up the requirements for identification. I found my passport and birth certificate and headed to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. The wait wasn't long, and the clerk was cheerful. She was sympathetic to the story about my missing wallet. She zipped through the paperwork with amazing speed and said, "That will be $10.50. I only had four $1 bills, so I handed her one of my husband's credit cards that I had been using. "I can't accept this. It doesn't have your name on it." "But it is an account I share with my husband. We both have cards to the same account." "Don't you have any credit cards with your name on them?" "Well, I have a number of them. They're in my wallet, the one that's missing, along with my driver's license." She gave me a look and called the next number. On the walk out, I thought of the man they made a movie about who was stranded 17 years in the Charles de Gaulle airport. He had the right paperwork to get in, but he didn't have the right paperwork to get out. It was a classic catch-22, like the first furniture we bought after we were married. We had settled on a table and six chairs from a local furniture store. We wanted to charge it so we could establish credit. The store said they couldn't extend us credit because we hadn't established credit. It's like applying for a job to get some experience, but nobody wants to hire you because you don't have experience. It's like the people who go around chirping, "You have to spend money to make money." They never acknowledge that you need money before you can spend money. I still don't have a driver's license, credit cards, or insurance cards, but I had $4 in my new and much lighter wallet, and I wasn't a prisoner of an airport or at the BMV. And that is the key to happiness. Remembering that when it's bad, it can always be worse. This has been Carol Bond with the February 2nd issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. I look forward to reading with you again.